There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
There we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. By the way, coming up in just a little bit, Dr. Bill updates our forecast. And you heard the mention there of the Hurricane Bud. Not for us. That's not an Atlantic Basin storm. So if you were worried about Bud, you heard that. We are not going to be threatened by Hurricane Bud. But there is a thing. Dr. Bill's probably hollering at me right now. A area of thunderstorms down in the near the Yucatan that may develop into something by this weekend. I'm dancing around it because I don't have the right turns, but Dr. Bill will. We'll talk to him later on the show. He doesn't seem to be very worried about it. Could be a big rainmaker for us over the weekend, but heck, how is that going to be different than how it's been lately? And those thunderstorms back with us this afternoon. Coming in from the northwest and storms over to our east and north. We're surrounded, Mobile and Baldwin County. We'll be getting that rain sometime this afternoon, just like yesterday. But more from Dr. Bill coming up. Also, we'll talk North Korea, Canada. We'll talk tariffs. We'll talk negotiations with the North Koreans and what could be coming next. And is China the big winner in this whole thing? We'll talk about that in the 1 o'clock hour. And today is second Tuesday of the month, and that means I get to talk to Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. He is in studio. Thanks for coming in.
Glad to be here. Sean.
It's, of course, last Tuesday, even if it would have been the second Tuesday, it wouldn't have worked because, Right. Yeah, you're busy. There was like election day or something like that.
Saw a lot of faces that day.
What do you do in that day? I mean, do you, is thinking about this, just not just as a sheriff, but as somebody running for office, is that the crush day where you're going to be everywhere, or is it, hey, by today, if I haven't met the people and shaken the hands, then...
Yeah, I think it's changing, and you see everybody changing. You don't have as many of the meet and greeters around the polling places as you used to, and I don't do much of that anymore. I think that, you know, when you've been running for election and everybody Yeah. Either knows you, they go there with their minds made up. Now, I guess on some of the real smaller races, if you would, that where people are not as well known, that's where it may help to have someone greeting the voters.
Yeah.
Because it may be somebody they were willing to vote for that they were not even knowledgeable of. And there were a couple of those, you know, like some of the judges' races, not the local judges' race, I think.
Right, but
State Court of Appeals, the Criminal Court of Appeals, Supreme Court. I mean, I thought I knew everybody on the ballot, but I actually was stumped on, I think, two of those races.
You make me feel better because, I mean, you're kind of in this business and mm-hmm. You didn't know some of the names. So imagine the rest of us going... who is this person? And what, you know, and for a lot of us, the Alabama Criminal Court of Appeal, like, what is that? How does, like, when does somebody see that court?
Well, no one would really see it. Just your lawyer that files an appeal in your case would see it.
Right.
And there's five judges.
But they would have to have been found guilty where?
In circuit court. Somewhere in the state, and then they appeal it to the on a criminal charge, they appeal it to them. And quite frankly, it's over the years has been quite an active court. The Court of Criminal Appeals overturned the case against the man that threw his four kids off the
Lam
bridge
Long.
A few
yeah.
years, Lam
yeah.
Long.
Yeah.
And fortunately, though, the state appealed their overturning to the state Supreme Court, and they reinstated it. But I can go back many, many years, and the Court of Appeals has turned over a lot of high-profile cases. And
is that where those death penalty appeals go? Do they go there?
They go there and then later to the Supreme Court.
Because, I mean, we hear those, I guess those are just higher profile, but I hear
sure.
them, but that's where they're being heard.
They first go to the Court of Criminal Appeals, then from there the state Supreme Court, and then they also, the attorneys can file different things to try to get it into federal court, and that's what a lot of them try to do and drag it out for years and years if they can ever get it in federal court.
On a personal level, I mean, as a police officer, police chief, sheriff, when you see something that you had either your deputies or your officers or yourself had made the arrest.
Mm-hmm.
And you do you ever do you just say my job's done and don't watch it, or do you pay attention to things as they move on up? And what does that feel like when something that you were the arresting officer or somebody that's close to you is, and you watch something matriculate up through the system to that level?
Oh yes, it's a good feeling. I follow it. You know, have some high profile cases, or the prosecutors will keep you informed of the status of a case, and then it goes to the appellate. I've had a number of cases from years ago that went to the 11th Circuit Court. I mean, the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals in Atlanta. Yeah. And then you get
really?
Yeah, and I've had a few of those. Usually it went back to my days when I worked narcotics on some search warrant cases. And then I had another case when I was the police chief. I think it was on a disciplinary action that someone we had demoted, and the personnel board had upheld it. They went to circuit court. Somehow they filed something in federal court, and it went to the 11th Circuit. And of course, they lost. And so you read the rule, and you read your name, and you read what the judges say and how they interpreted it. And sometimes you wonder if they're reading the same thing that you testified about, because it sometimes it can really just splinter off into certain little areas. And
yeah, that's what I wanted to get into, is not, you know, the positive ones, but where you made the arrest. You know this person's maybe not even something that's admissible in court, mm-hmm. but you know they're guilty. Mm-hmm. But you know it beyond a shadow of a doubt. Mm-hmm. And you watch it get to that level of appeals, and I believe in people's right. You know, a civil libertarian, Sean Sullivan, will defend them all day long for their right to these appeals. But do you ever hear something that's being appealed or nuance being discussed and be bothered by the fact that you know this person's guilty, and maybe they're found not guilty?
I've certainly have seen that over the years. And
do you know, have you seen a case where you know somebody has been let go and you're like, that person was guilty of sin?
Well, certainly was named Vernon Madison, the guy that killed Julius Schulte. You know, yep. I worked under Julius Schulte as a cadet, and then I was a officer in juvenile with him, and then he was murdered, and of course he was convicted. I think convicted two or three times, and then here about a year ago when he was on death row, some court overturned it or something. And fortunately, another court came behind and overturned that ruling, so he's back once again for death row. But I think the Supreme Court is the highest court mm-hmm. in the land overturned the lower ruling. But it still had to kick it back to another court, so it's still floundering there. But I was so disappointed when I felt like that some court after 30 years had overturned it, you know, after he had been convicted so many times. But again, it's on again.
Well, and there's a difference. I can sit here and read news stories, mm-hmm. read news accounts, secondhand, thirdhand, and hear things mm-hmm. and go, oh gosh, that facts look like that person was guilty and should be. But it's different being in law enforcement like you, to have, like, there's things that you just know. You were there.
Here's an interesting story I like to share with people. I came up as a police cadet in the police department, worked in records, and I was going to South Alabama in criminal justice, and heard this term, the lawyers and some may know, that was called the Boykin rights. And the Boykin rights is a court ruling that said that the judge has to tell you, you got to understand before you plead guilty that you've got to be tried by 12, you got to be indicted, you got to have a lawyer with it. It's about 10 or 12 rights the judge has to read out for you to understand.
Okay, this is like Miranda rights are on arrest. Yeah. This is for being able to
plead guilty before the judge. So it all happened as Boykin versus Alabama is the Supreme Court case. Well, it all started at the Albright and Woods at Government and DIP. When I was a kid, unbeknownst to me, this guy had went in to rob the place, and he fired several shots into the ceiling and robbed the drugstore, and he left. Well, they caught him red-handed, I think, with the bag of money and the gun and all that. He goes to court. He pleads guilty, and the judge says, I hereby sentence you to death. And they're like, whoa, wait a minute, death? And so they appealed that, and the Supreme Court ultimately set aside the death sentence and created the Boykin rights out of that case. So I had studied that case at South Alabama. Then I was a police cadet, so I go down the stairs, down in the basement of the jail, down in this vaulted room that had just tens of thousands of case reports, and I get up on a stepladder, pull this big old file down, pull it out, and I pulled the original arrest report, an investigation from about 1967 or 68 or something like that, and read it and made a copy of it. I still have a copy of that in my house somewhere in some files.
Wow. So what you were studying, you went and put your hands on the physical document.
And of course, I grew up right around it. So that case right there started when all of the Supreme Court and every court in land follows the Boykin rights.
That's a set precedent nationally.
Yes. It was a Supreme Court decision. And so every defendant in every court, before they plead guilty, they have to be apprised of their rights, which tells them, again, they just can't walk in and say, oh, y'all got me, I'm guilty. You know, no, you can't just plead guilty unless you have had all those things read to you and you agree that you understand that.
That started right here in Mobile.
Right here in Mobile.
I'll be darned. All right, coming back, we'll grab your calls and text. Also, questions for Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. He is in studio and be hanging out with us for quite a while here. So get those questions in. We'll get them answered and might pick his brain on more of those. It's kind of cool to see it full circle. Wow. 12:16. We'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Tuesday. Good to have Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran in studio as well, and we'll take your questions and also a lot to talk about here. I want to kind of run through, of course, last week, the election, and Republican primary, right. and you won handily there.
Mm-hmm.
And this idea of having to, because it's the sheriff's, most of the places in the country, right, it's an elected position.
It's an elected position, and it's a partisan position. And, of course, many would say it may not should be a partisan position.
Right.
You know, it's a law enforcement position as well. But
it is a kind of different, we're so used to it, I don't even question it. But if you looked at other parts of law enforcement around the country, the idea that you'd be talking about, if they have an R or D behind their name, would seem very strange.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it makes it partisan, and I would be one to agree that it perhaps should not be partisan, but at the same time, I can tell you that once I got elected and took office, I discovered something I thought was quite interesting. The fact that you run for office and get elected, it puts you close to the people, and I realized that the deputies, probably better than the police officers, understood that, hey, my boss gets elected, and when I serve this call, if that person says, I'm going to call the sheriff, I'm not satisfied. It's kind of like that's the original community policing.
Okay.
Before we discovered in the law, in the police department side or the police side of things, the police, I think, you know, we're not there yet until community policing came along in the mid-'80s, late-'80s, and going forward. But it's a
yeah, you got to be difference. Responsive, right? I mean,
That's exactly right.
You got customers.
They're customers. They're exactly right. And, of course, until community policing came along, I think, you know, police officers didn't see the citizens as their customers the same as a deputy sheriff does.
Well, it is interesting. People have the right of recall of that position every time they go to the polls.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like almost everywhere. You and I were talking during the news break. It's an elected position. There's just a few places where it's not.
Right.
And then you also pointed out the city of the what is it? The New York City sheriff? County?
City of New York sheriff. There's a sheriff that's there, but he does not oversee nothing but the jail. And
so they're a sheriff, but they don't have any jurisdiction
other than the jail. Now, Miami-Dade, we've all heard of Miami-Dade. Mm-hmm. I forget it was called something else 10 years ago, but it still sort of changed its name. The sheriff there is appointed by the mayor of Miami-Dade. And I thought that was very unusual. I just met Juan Perez is the sheriff there. I was at a convention with him last week. Spent a lot of time speaking with him, and you know he's down there close to that park and shooting and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, but he's appointed by the mayor there.
You know, speaking of the overall of sheriffs, and this wouldn't be around the country, it'd be around the state. I thought about this during the ads running, and the people on the shows with me that were running for office in the primary, and how many people were talking about arming teachers.
Yes.
And I think that you and I have talked about that before. I think when people throw that out as a blanket term, they're not doing a service to the discussion, because arming teachers can mean a lot of things to a lot of people.
Right, it sure
they're
is.
They're just, they're for arming teachers, they're against arming teachers. Mm-hmm. Within that, to me, there's at least three different paths, if not more than that, right?
You've got, with the teachers, you may have administrators, you have school resource officers, and you have just the fourth grade classroom teacher.
Right. It's not, you know, you just say, it depends on how you want to hear it. Mm-hmm. If you say arming teachers, I can picture something where they're walking down the hallway and you get a gun and you get a gun and mm-hmm. you get a gun and you get a gun. Somebody may hear it that way. I hear it as somebody with a concealed carry who wants to, you know, pass extra certification, being allowed to keep that concealed trained. Weapon That's on right. themselves. They're trained. It's not public. Mm-hmm. They have it. It's not a... And then the other part of this, like you and I talked about here in Mobile County, and I'm going to go back to this, and I'm going to keep harping on it too. Because it's frustrating to me, and I don't think enough people know the situation where Mobile County Public School System, no armed resource officers.
Right. For several years, they were all armed, and then about 14 years ago, they were disarmed by, I think, an order of either the state superintendent and then later the local superintendents, I guess, and they've never been allowed to carry them back. And just to, for instance, nearly every one of them is an ex-police officer or deputy sheriff in the county school system. And two of them, I know, left me a year and a half ago. They were both on their SWAT teams. So I know they're more than capable when they can't carry.
Holy cow. And it seems like why I said there are so many, when you say arming teachers, that means so many things to... So let's go to what I think has to be the most defensible, the easiest thing, it would seem like, it seems like I'm wrong, but the easiest thing to implement as we move through a spectrum of what will be required to help secure schools, and you can't secure from every evil every day, but make our schools more secured, for Mobile County, letting trained ex-military, ex-law enforcement, who are now there at the school, carry a weapon. I don't know why, and I'm not doing this for effect, I don't know why that's even an argument.
Yeah, I certainly don't understand it, because if we look at many of these shootings across the country, we see where many times, time and again, many teachers have gotten in harm's way and have been shot or have been killed trying to save the kids. And so there's a commitment there for certain individuals that if they were at least armed, you know, while they stand between the children and the gunman, they'd at least have a fighting chance. But again, it's for those that are willing to take extra training and meet a certain qualification.
These are people that already, you just told us, they're already qualified.
Oh, yeah, sure, for them.
And they're already, they're already qualified, and they're already working at the school.
Right.
As a resource officer.
Exactly. So I think it's just, certainly at this point in time, it should be a stopgap method until other things are put in place, such as further target hardening of the schools and changing of some of our laws. And you've heard me speak of the red flag laws, and I'm a supporter of that with certain reasons. And I think that's where we're headed until this phenomenon changes. And I think at some point in time, the knowledge of shooting schools up will go away. It'll pass on to something else. I mean, it usually does. We've gone through...
You've taught me that every time. Whatever it is, there's always going to be...
Something else that follows. We've gone through going postal. We've gone through hijackings to Cuba. We've gone through workplace violence. We've gone through, other things, and there'll be something that comes behind this, and this will fade away.
But you said it. Stopgap measure. This is... Mm-hmm. Instead of these big idealistic debates that need to happen, but will happen in Washington or Montgomery or wherever... This is something that at home could be put into effect, unless I'm missing something, fairly quickly with a decision from the school board, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you said you would offer...
Offer the training and everything else.
So the sheriff's department would offer the training, make sure these people are good to go. You know these people personally, most of them. And make sure that they're... with no cost to the school board. I mean, it wouldn't cost the school board to have an officer, a school resource officer... be able to carry.
Yeah. I mean, it
seems so foolish to me.
People closest to the situation oftentimes have the best answers. What just jumped in my mind was, remember several years ago in the Iraqi war when the Alabama Guardsmen started building these armored Humvees, and then they were told, no, you can't do that, because they were putting armored plating on the Humvees to protect themselves. And then just a few years later, guess what? Then the military starts building the armored upright Humvees or something.
Right.
So they were the on the spot knowing to do it, but then they would say, no, you can't do that. Well, guess what? They turned around and came back and did it 3 or 4 years later.
It's unbelievable. We're in that situation. Now, Baldwin County is different, but Mobile County Public School System, no armed.
Right.
Now, in the
Baldwin
County,
I think they have sworn deputies that are the school resource officers, and ours, and they work for the Baldwin County SO or something, whereas ours work for the school system. And in different school systems, sometimes the resource officers are not employees of the school system, but they're employees of the local law enforcement agency or that local sheriff's office.
But just to have the option of having somebody that's already showed the credentials for this be able to carry, I think it should be a light lift, but it seems to be. All right, a bunch of questions coming in on the text line. This one from David. During the campaign, I heard that the sheriff was responsible for introducing a copper bill, which has since drastically reduced the theft of air conditioners. Thanks for this accomplishment. Can you explain to me how this works?
Yeah, it passed regulations on the recycled metal dealers. They had to all start gathering information and documenting who they were purchasing it from. They would have to document the vehicle that the person came in with the tag number, and even get pictures of the materials that they were buying. And then they'd have to report that to law enforcement. So, and there's only so many, like, metal dealers in Mobile County, I think, one time. It seemed like there was something like scrap metal dealers, mm-hmm. like 18 or so. And so when you had an air conditioner or a series of air conditioners beat up in a copper store, and you'd go look, see who might have been stealing copper, and you see these names, and we may would run that against a check. But right. oftentimes what we found that the people that were selling the copper were already wanted for us. We just didn't know where to go find them. And so when they'd get the tag number in the car they're driving in, and it'd come in electronically, we designed the system electronically and gave it to them. So when they reported it, it would come directly into our system. And so we were arresting wanted persons constantly every week when they would sell the metal. We say, hey, he just left over here. Y'all be on the lookout. He's in a blue car, da-da-da. Next thing you know, we'd arrest him. And so it just had a huge impact by just working smarter, not harder.
It's true. It is. A lot of stuff y'all do with technology is that way. I mean, not just you're disincentivizing them to try to go sell the metal. You're going mm-hmm. ahead and getting them off the streets as it is.
That's right. Or say somebody, you know, you had a rash of catalytic converters. You know, at one time we were having a lot of that. They'd get under with a Sawzall and saw it off, and it's $500-$600 or more to replace. So if you hit a neighborhood where a rash on the stone, we'd go hit the metal deal and say, all right, who just sold a bunch of catalytic converters? Duh.
You know, so I could even figure that one out.
Yeah,
probably.
That's right.
That's probably one of our suspects. We're coming back. We'll get more questions for the sheriff, Sheriff Sam Cochran, our guest right here on Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5. Remember, details of the Summer Better Than Others giveaway on our Facebook page, website, the Instagram page, also Twitter feed. Heck, we'll even mail you a flyer if we have to. $5,500 worth of goodies for you, and weekly winners as well, winning $50 prizes and leading up to that grand prize, over $5,000 of giveaway items. Check them out and our sponsors, and we'll talk more about that in just a little bit. I'm going to continue our conversation with Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran in studio. Your chance to ask the sheriff. You got a question you've wanted to ask for the longest time. This is your chance to do it. Get the answer from the sheriff. I found out during the news break answer to a question I have had for a long time. And we're talking about metal and the metal thefts that had gone on, and this text we had gotten from David. And I brought up manhole covers because you and I were talking about how it was. You talking about the catalytic converters. I said, I knew, and whenever that was, 07, 08, or whatever, mm-hmm. this metal thing had gotten really, really bad when there were news stories I was reporting that manhole covers in the city of Mobile were missing because people were stealing them to sell for scrap metal. Mm-hmm. And my buddies and I had sat around forever and said, how the heck do you pull that one off? How do you show up at the metal buyer recycling place and go, well, I had these manhole covers laying around the house. I'm going to sell them. And you said, nah, they weren't doing it that way.
No, they would steal them and put them in cars that they were going to carry and haul to the scrap yard where the cars would be scrapped. And so it would add weight to the car, to the weight of the car.
So that's how they hid them.
So they'd hide them in the car, and I'd add a few extra 100 pounds when they put some of them in there and boost up the amount of money they'd get paid for the steal.
I never knew how that worked because you just answered a big question because I always wondered. I said, is somebody walking up there to the scrap yard and saying,
yeah,
these 15 manhole covers I just happened to have laying around out in the shop.
Yeah.
But they put them in the cars and hide them in there that way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this from Thomas says, ask the sheriff, what can be done about people running red lights? It's getting more and more prevalent, and this is from South Mobile County, more and more prevalent that people don't care. They're running through the red lights, not just yellow, full red lights. I had an incident a couple years ago where a man drove through a red light and T-boned me and my driver's side. Is there anything that can be done? Thank you.
Well, a couple of things. Of course, stepped up law enforcement by the responsible agencies to write the tickets. Of course, oftentimes those people that run the red lights, you can see them looking, kind of scanning the intersection perhaps to see if there's any marked units around there. Of course, the legislatures and most people in general don't like the idea of red light cameras.
You know, they picking feel like a fight with me. You
know, exactly. People don't like that, but that's certainly is a solution that works, but people don't like it. And then the businesses that have been behind the camera systems have been accused, maybe falsely and sometimes correctly, I've seen as well, where they, you know, more about revenue and maybe fudge on some of that stuff too. A lot of people don't realize, speaking of me, because you mentioned a yellow light, that, you know, when you enter that intersection, if you still enter the intersection when the intersection or the light is yellow, you still have the right to be in that intersection. And even if the red light turns red while you're in the intersection, you have the control of that intersection. Until you clear it, the person that gets the green light doesn't have the right of way.
That's good deduction.
It's oftentimes misunderstood, but, you know, the yellow light comes on to give you a heads up that the red light's getting ready to come, but if you get into that intersection before the red light,
it's yours until
red,
you exit.
It's yours until you exit the other side.
That's for somebody moving quickly or somebody maybe turning slowly onto the road, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or some, you know, or somebody, you
they
know,
might get
jackrabbit to start, you know, sitting there and the light turns green, boom, they jackrabbit out, and then all of a sudden they hit somebody that was still had control of the intersection.
And I got T-boned myself last month, I guess it was, and it was a situation where I don't think a red light camera would have mattered at all. I think the person, you know, I don't, you know, I'm not gone to this level with this case yet, but I mean, I don't think they were even aware of what was happening, right? And so, and it happened, by the way, y'all, it happens very fast, and I hadn't talked about it on the air, but I mean, airbags deployed, the whole nine yards, we got hit. My son was in the truck with me, but it happened that fast, and that person, they didn't even check up. There weren't even skid marks.
Yeah. Wow.
Thank goodness I was in a big truck and they were in a small car. But there's, yeah, there's all kinds. There's not people paying attention. There are people I'm running it who are just going to, they get that pressure. They feel like they got to get through that light. But
get in a hurry, but distracted driving, and so much of distracted driving is looking down at their phone to either look a phone number up or text somebody or something like that, and they just get carried away and look down too long.
Do you think that that, like, so new vehicles out have a bunch of things to, not prevent that, but at least remind folks they're getting distracted? You know, if you're trying to adjust this or that, my new truck will tell you, like, I was sitting there at a traffic light, but because it wasn't in park, I had scanning through some media on it, and it said, no more until the car's parked.
Right. I think the technology is coming from various of those things, just like that, what, the app Wave or something. If you try to, you know, it knows if you're moving or not. If you try to turn it on or put something in a location, and if you're moving, it says, sorry, you can't use this while you're moving, or you passenger. And, of course, everybody lies and says, yeah, I'm the passenger.
That's right. That's right.
Here's their information. But at least they've tried to do the right thing.
Right. But there, I mean, there are some things, I think, for, listen, if you're just going to do it, you're going to get around it. But sometimes a gentle nudge or reminder, I don't think is a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
It just might make you go, yeah, you know what? You're right. This can wait for later.
That's right. And, of course, Bluetooth, I did not know this until recently. Someone was telling me that if you have too many Bluetooth things running close by, it won't work, or it'll shut your Bluetooth down.
Huh. Well, didn't I not test it, but once I get the kids in the
vehicle. So if you ever try to get your Bluetooth running on your boat or something like that one time and it won't work, check and see how many people have their phones on around you, and if they've got Bluetooth turned on, turn them off.
It just maxes out. This texter says, are colored accent lights on motorcycles legal in Alabama? A city officer told me to turn off and said that they are illegal.
I'll be honest, I don't know the exact answer to that. I know a partial answer. You can't have, obviously, blue lights showing on it. And you've got to have your red taillights have got to be showing on it in the proper places. But the other colors, I'm not sure. And I know it's against the law to put a colored light over the tag, you know, that would illuminate it differently. It's supposed to be just that white tag light.
Right.
It can't be a colored tag there. So depending on the other type of lights, I'm not sure.
This one, speaking of tags, what gets me is paper tags.
Yeah.
You know, how long is that? I mean, I often see the tag applied for written in Sharpie marker on a piece of paper.
You know, some of the dealers are slow getting the paperwork in to where they can get the tags back. They have to have it, you have to have the title and all like that to get the tag. And sometimes you buy a car and they don't have the title to go with the sale because, you know, and they have to apply for the title first to get the title and then go get the tag. And so sometimes there can be undue delays. But I acknowledge there's certainly some wrongdoing going on the part of people not getting attacked.
Or you can only go, now Nick Matranga is going to call me in a second, or you can only go on a Wednesday. Wait a second. Get your applied for.
Yeah, yeah. And then he said, well, they're closed every time I go. Don't hold it against me. I tried.
This texter says, what is the proper place to report dangerous or illegal driving by police officers? For instance, speeding through a school zone without emergency lights on. If some citizens want to report officers, how do they do that?
I would say if it's a in the city of Mobile, I'd say call the Mobile Police Chief's office and report it there. If it's the sheriff's deputy, I'd be welcome to call to my office and tell us the date and time and the car number. You know, I mean, we rely on the citizens to help us to police our own sometimes, and we do have people that drive too fast occasionally.
I wonder if Trey on the text line here is just trolling because he wants to watch the steam come out of my ears, or he's actually asking, what is the proper procedure at a traffic intersection where one set of lights is blinking yellow and the other is blinking red?
The one's blinking red, you have to stop. The one's blinking yellow, you have the right-of-way. But it's telling you to be cautious.
How many times have I hollered at people?
See, it confuses people. A lot of times when the lights or the power goes off or something like that, they'll all go to blinking red in all four directions.
And that's a four-way stop.
That's a four-way stop. But I think sometimes the lights get out of sync and they'll blink red to some direction but still remain yellow. Well, I think people get that confused with as if they're all blinking red and you should stop and share it, but it doesn't. You've still got the right-of-way with yellow. But I've seen that happen where you can tell people are confused.
Yeah, well, and I tell you where I see it, the yellow and red is in the wee hours of the morning, often being heading out to go fishing or something like that, or I leave to go hunting. And like Dolphin Street near my house, there are places where you have some light, you know, coming on to Dolphin is red. Mm-hmm. Like if you're getting off the interstate, that's blinking red. But the traffic going through that intersection east and west would be a blinking yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And they can go through. I just got to wait for them to go through.
I saw an intersection like that this morning, I think at Range Line and Halls Mill Road. It was blinking red and flashing yellow, and of course that's a busy intersection, and so something must have caused the lights to get out of sequence, and maybe that's a default setting, but still the yellow light, blinking light, those people had the way, but people are slowing down, then the person with the red light thinks, oh, they're going to give me the right of way or something. So it's got to be cautious.
Right. The hesitation, which, I mean, you're smart to do and you want to do because you're entering in an intersection.
Mm-hmm. And the yellow light is telling you, hey, something's up, be cautious.
But you're right. The other person could read that as the, I'm going to let you through.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we have to have a better solution for that going forward. I don't know. Jace says on the colored lights, he said, the colored light while in motion is not legal. Mm-hmm. Parked color is irrelevant, so it's just while in motion, I guess, that's the issue.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool if you've got lights that can change from when you're moving to when you're sitting still.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What about that? And, you know, we talk about things on vehicles. Alabama is not exactly hardcore on vehicle inspection.
Right.
We're probably the most lenient in the nation.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Okay. How bad does it have to get before one of your deputies pulls somebody over? I mean,
let me say this. Sometimes we have deputies that specialize in some things more than others.
Okay.
So some deputies pay closer attention to the darkened windows, you know, the blacked out windows, because they understand the laws better. And of course, some of them would have the meters. But a lot of that has changed as the invent of so many more SUVs. You know, some of the blacked out windows are, you know, the laws different on SUVs versus regular passenger
cars.
Why
is that? That seems like unfair treatment.
Well, good question, but I mean,
these are questions
that's
for
all
next
set
time.
By the Federal Highway Administration and
in
the design of that stuff.
I'm sounding like everybody else, but I think we're all in the same. How many working brake lights or tail lights does a vehicle have to be legal in the state of Alabama? I mean, do they have to?
Yeah, I mean, they're all supposed to be working, and you know, just like a single headlight, you know, it's against the law to drive around with a headlight. Of course, you know, we have warning tickets where you get a ticket, and the law sets up, if you get it repaired in so many hours or so many days or something like
come
that, then
and
the ticket will be dismissed. But it's just a single, you know, taillight is against the law.
Okay, because
unless you're on a motorcycle, I guess.
Right, that's true. Sometimes I see the single tail light with the single headlight combo. When you get behind them, then pass them.
Or the red tape over the cracked lens.
Let's see here. I tell you what, we're going to run to the break here, come right back, because a lot of questions coming in for Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. You get yours in on the text line or the phone line, 343-0106, 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:51, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran in the studio answering your questions. Get to the phones in just a second. I want to get this text. Interesting. Omar asked here, he said, I got a question for the sheriff. I was pulled over about 4 years ago, and the officer said he pulled me over because my tag was dirty and he couldn't see the expiration date. Made sense to me, but then I see cars all the time with wheelchair dollies blocking tag view access. What's the protocol on that? That is interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Or if I have one of those deer baskets on the back and a big cooler, you can't see my license.
No, you're right. Probably technically that's against the law, I would think. Just like the dirty tag and can't see the decal, I mean, it's got to be visible and all such as that. I think the true way with the wheelchair thing, you're supposed to put the tag on the back end of the thing.
Okay, on the dolly.
Yeah, so you're supposed to. It's still got to be displayed and all of those things.
Because there's a lot of things people hook into a draw tight hitch or whatever on the back of the vehicle that could obscure that tag.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So at that point, so we're hearing it from the sheriff, put the tag on the back of whatever that thing is.
Yeah, if it's going to be on there all the time, but you'd have to, or make it temporary, but it's supposed to be visible. But let's be honest, who's going to stop someone with a wheelchair thing on the back like that?
There's reality, yeah.
But when you speak about the barbecue and the igloo and all like that on that back extra carrier, that certainly is
I'm guilty of that.
Yeah.
I think I've done, if you have one of those deer basket things, you know, the basket on the back of it pops in your draw tight and you're hauling extra luggage.
I don't know if you say it's technology, but it's advanced faster than the law has.
Yeah.
Because probably technically, you know, you can only have, you know, you probably need lights on that extender or something too, you know, the rear part, but you don't. And so it's just hadn't been addressed by the law yet.
And very few people with those things, we don't exactly have them on all the time.
Right.
It's something people put, you know, hey, we're going on the family vacation and there are so many bags of luggage in the back. Any kind of cooler or things that can get wet have to go back out on this thing. So maybe that's an excuse for my family not to bring so much luggage. Let's go to John and Daphne next. You're on with Sheriff Cochran.
Hi, John.
John, you there? There we go.
I'm there. Hello.
Yeah, we got you now. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. No problem. So a little bit of an abstract question for the sheriff. On 98, some of the speeding, these people that speed ought to buy lottery tickets because I'd never see them get caught. And it just got me to thinking, because I'm a child of the 70s, are radar detectors still effective with modern technologies that sheriffs use?
Well, it depends on what type radar detector. You know, the law enforcement changes that with technology, they improve their technology, but the radar detector companies, they adjust accordingly. And so we've gone through several phases of radar detectors over the last several years. You know, the technology is, so there, some of them are still effective, and some of them are not.
I was just wondering about, you know, with apps now on your phones and everything like that, are you having to, I guess the word is, fight technology at times to do your job? And thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Yeah, certainly you have to fight the technology. You won't see a trooper sitting up on the same spot all day long on the intersection. He's going to set up radar, run it for a little bit, then he's going to shut it down and move his location and move up and down the highway, whereas maybe 25 years ago, you might get behind the same bush and stay there for several hours and wear them out. But you can't do that anymore.
But now we publicize for
exactly. Yeah.
Let's go to Jerry in Foley next. Hey, Jerry.
Sheriff Cochran, I couldn't vote for you, but if I could, I would.
Well, thank you, sir.
I always enjoy listening to you guys on the show. I've got a question about improper passing. I don't know. Maybe, Sean, you're more familiar with County Road 13 in Daphne between Highway 90 and 64.
Mm-hmm.
But I was going down County Road 13, and I'm pulling a trailer, and I noticed I'm gaining pretty steadily on this little bitty truck with a heavy load and black smoke coming out. And right there where Daphne High School is, he runs out of gas. And so to avoid hitting him, I straddled the line, and he moved over as far right as he could without going into the ditch. And so I stopped and then went through the intersection, and a Daphne police officer pulled me over. He said, "You know what I pulled you over for?" I said, "No, I know I wasn't speeding." He said, "Oh, no." He said, "Improper passing."
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, "Okay, well, I signed the ticket," and I went to court. And they won't let you take your phone in court. And since then, I now travel with a dash cam. But I had pictures on my phone where the guy had pushed his car or pushed his his little S10 truck up, and you know, I got his tag number and everything. Mm-hmm. But they did not want to hear about that. They were more just, they wanted my money.
Well, I mean, I got a fair question. I'll ask the Sheriff Forrest, what's he supposed to do in that situation? What's Jerry supposed to do?
Well, you can't just stop there in the middle of the road and stay
right
parked there, I don't think.
So you got to get around him.
You've got to get around him. If that car is pulling off the edge of the road, you go around a little bit. That doesn't seem like a improper passing to me. But, again, I don't know it from the eyes of the officer. But, you know, those are the cases I hate to hear about because it sort of does give you know, a bad impression that someone's right. being a little too overly aggressive. And that's where the judges are supposed to figure that out. But, you know, different cities enforce the laws a little more stringent than others.
What about that? I mean, he mentioned the dash cam thing.
There's a lot of people using those, not, well, maybe for what he's using it for as well, but a lot of people use it to film a wreck, or as you said, there was an issue in your wreck, maybe about who had the right-of-way on a red light, and if you've got that dash cam going, it's going to automatically capture whether you had the right-of-way or not.
Hey, with the technology getting...
And you can get those things really, really
so cheap. That's what I'm saying, being so affordable might be standard issue in our vehicles.
Yeah.
My new one's got a mount for my GoPro camera. I just haven't got it mounted there inside the truck. Go through a lot of SD cards doing that. But, you mount one of those things fairly easily.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
All right. Let's see here. I tell you what, we'll ask these off the air because we're about done with the hour. I want you to get a chance to tell folks if they want to interact with the Sheriff's Department. Y'all have a lot of places on social media.
Like us on Facebook or follow us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram.
What about the app?
In the app, download the app. It's a free app. Download it and get access to our 24 hours of booking and all our news releases and look and see who's wanted.
See
where crime's occurring on the map itself. It shows where the last 24 hours worth of crimes have occurred.
Yeah, y'all download that app. I've had it on my phone for years. I like it. It's a good one. Sheriff, thanks for your time.
Sean, it's always enjoyable. Great listeners and enjoy interacting with them.
Well, come back very soon. We'll see you next month.
Thank you.
All right, hour number two on the way next.